hands up if you're not back. I didn't say if you're not here. I know some of you are never here, even though. Anyway, we're ready to start today's session. And today's session I've entitled Hope for the Future. Hope for the Future. And I can't resist just mentioning that reading that we had from 1 Peter, that excellent reading Melanie and Mark thought was a little bit obscure. But I'm sure you know this one. This was the first one that came to my mind when we were thinking about hope. That verse from verse 15. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. Always be ready to give an answer about the hope that you have. Our hope is in Jesus Christ. Am I right?
Yes.
Brilliant. It's not a strange reading at all. That's an obvious reading when you're thinking about hope for the church. What are you on about? Anyway, where was I?
Suffering.
Yes, that's right. You know, that lovely evocative music. But we're moving on to a much more hopeful theme for this session. Hope for the church. I want to recommend this book. I don't know Bob Jackson. Where's David? Does he know?
He's not here.
You sent him off to work again?
No, he'll be back in a minute.
All right, okay. I just thought he might know Bob.
I haven't heard him mention.
Okay. Bob Jackson. He's another Anglican. And like I say, I don't know him, so I'm not recommending a friend of mine buy his book or anything. But I've got two books which I found incredibly helpful from Bob Jackson. And this one was actually written in 2002.
Ooh.
So it's really old. Well, relatively. If you're at college, you can't use any books that are more than 10 years old, unless it's someone like Barthes, or it's got to be contemporary writers. Yes, Hope for the Church, it's called. Contemporary Strategies for Growth. And a lot of this session is actually based around chapter 3, which he entitled Church Growth Mission Possible. Not impossible, it's possible. And he begins by saying about the part of the problem is the hopelessness which is within our churches. But I thought this was an interesting quote as well. Growth is not only possible, it is also the natural condition of the church, and it is already widespread. And we said yesterday that wasn't our experience right across the country, was it? A lot of us have experienced churches that are in decline, and numbers are struggling to find new people. We're having to merge with others. We're talking to the Methodists down the road. We're not always able to believe that this is true. And Bob refers to a faithlessness of despair. After a century in which church attendance declined slowly, and in some years more rapid decline, it's easy to give way to despair. The pace of change in society gets ever faster. All institutions seem to be in long-term, irreversible retreat. We have tried everything already, and it did not work. The church has lost respect, the respect it once had as a pillar of the country. Generations are growing up with no knowledge or experience of church. How can the church do anything other than shrink and hang on by its fingernails? And then Bob writes this. Christians who believe this have swallowed the devil's biggest lie. Yes? If we've succumbed to that sense of it's all a disaster, nothing can change where we are, then actually we've been hoodwinked, we've been conned, because God has not given up on the church. The New Testament sees growth in numbers, of the numbers following Christ, as both natural and desirable. This is because the work of growing the kingdom is at root God's own job. It's not about us, it's about God. And of course, in some ways that's easy to say, isn't it? So we say, oh, well, it's all down to God. If the church doesn't grow, it's up to God. But I think there might be a little bit of God needs us to listen to what he's calling us to do. I don't use a lot of Latin, so forgive me. This will be the only Latin I use. For those of you that are experts in Latin, that's fine. And I apologise if I mispronounce. But Missio Dei, or mission of God, God's mission, is one of those phrases that's been around for a little while in the church. Some aspects. This is now quoted from another book, another Anglican, Michael Moynihan, who's written quite a bit about changing church. And his most recent book is Church for Every Context. And in this book, he goes through the theology behind church growth. When he writes, some important aspects of the Missio Dei are: mission is a first step for God. It's not a second thing we do. It's not a thing we do after worship. It's just the first step for God is mission. The first step involves self-giving. God's self-giving was in Jesus Christ, in the cross. And if we're going to follow that example, our first step will involve self-giving. The church echoes the divine self-giving when it gives itself in mission. Mission as a first step for the church is a response to God's grace. Does that make sense? Are we following that? At the core of Missio Dei is the idea of sending. It is the Son and the Spirit who are sent, and the church in their wake. Mission is a first step for God. That may be something you're very familiar with. It may be that you're quite up to date with all that has been around for a while in biblical scholarship and in our various colleges. I think it was... I've forgotten your name. Yes.
Wendy.
It was Wendy that was saying to me yesterday about why is it, in our discussion group, you were saying this, why is it that so many ministers don't tell people what they've learned at college? They go away to these wonderful training colleges that we've got all around the country, and then they don't go and share that and the power of that with their congregations. And that made me think. So thank you for that question, Wendy. It made me think. But this is one of the things that I haven't really mentioned this at Park Church, have I, Gain? This book? No. It's one of the most complicated books I've ever read. But it's also one of the most brilliant books I've ever read. It was written by a South African, David J. Bosch. And it's... I always like to show you the front cover, because I remember books by the colour of the cover. So it's the one with the purple cover. It's about this thing. And it is the most significant book on mission that's been written in the last 100 years, probably. He's so comprehensive. It covers every aspect of mission you could possibly cover. But one of the reasons I've never mentioned it is it's so complicated. I don't know, have you read it, David? It's not on your bookshelf, him?
No, it's on hers.
Well, that's right. When you get home, lend it to him. Okay? Then have a little flick through. But it is such a complicated book. It covers every aspect of it, of mission, evangelism, evangelization, the difference between the two, the way Anglicans understand evangelism, the way Catholics understand evangelism. It is the most comprehensive book. But if you want to know more about Missio Dei, about this paradigm shift, he talks about... We're at a point where everything has changed. The way we've looked at things in the past, the way we've done mission in the past around the world. He says we're at a paradigm shift moment, a moment which is a kind of irreversible change has taken place. And we're into a new understanding of mission. So if I was to recommend another book, or a book from my college days, it would be this one, Transforming Mission. It's still relevant, it's still on the book lists, because it is the most comprehensive book on mission. So, mission. Mission possible? This is again a quote from Bob Jackson. But I've made one change, and you'll understand why. As I thought you were mainly from a URC background, I've substituted the word URC, where he put Anglican. But I think whatever church you come from, just put your church name in there, okay? So as I read that, I want you just to put your church name. The task is not easy. And the URC, the Anglican, the Methodist, has no great track record of being nimble on its feet. But it must be possible, because the grower, the builder, the driving force behind the church is Jesus Christ himself. And he will never desert us. No matter how small the church gets, no matter how few of us are left, and some people have sort of looked to the future and said, well, another 10, 20 years' time, it'll just be Mark and me, and we'll take it in turns to be moderator. there won't be 13 synods, it'll just be the one. And we'll just take it in turns, that's fine. We're ready. some people are getting so pessimistic about the way forward, and it's all plan for decline. And actually, I want to say, it doesn't have to be that way. Yes, we have to be realistic. Of course we have to be realistic. But you know, there's no reason why we can't get together and encourage one another. As Mark was saying, we felt so strongly in Wessex Synod that we got together people that might be interested in talking about growing the church. Because we can always talk about decline and planning for smaller numbers. But actually, why not actually think about the opposite? Why not think about growing? And why not have a bit of hope for the future rather than keeping talking it down? Say, well, it's obvious we're going to decline.
Everyone's declining.
Well, it's not true that everyone's declining. I did an analysis of the last 10 years in the Wessex Synod of the URC, and about 30% of the churches have actually seen their membership either stay the same or go up. 30%. Okay, so two-thirds of the churches have not gone up in that time. Some of them gone down a little bit, some of them gone down a lot. The average is 3% decline per year, we're told. But it's not true across the board. And so if we've got some churches that are growing, the question that comes back to me is, well, what do we do about it? Do we ignore the fact that some of them are growing and some of them are not? Or do we go and ask, why are you growing? How are you growing? How can we learn from you? Time for a cartoon. We're getting too serious. So this is for Les. Especially. This one's called How to Make the Church Brilliant. And I know the writing's a bit small, so I'll have to read it to you. And there are many ways to make your church brilliant. Okay, take these as you find them. Making the preaching dynamic. So, yes, we want preachers to stand on one hand and hold the Bible in the other hand whilst doing a handstand and preach at the same time. Have comfortable seating. We talked about chaise longue yesterday. This one is an enormous armchair. Actually, it reminds me, I was on placement at a lovely church in Withenshaw where there was a whole back row of armchairs for people who were in their later stages in life, shall we say. But they had their own comfort chair. Make allowances for those who find the service time a bit early. So on this side, we've got a nice bed. Nice bed. Nice comfy Swanwick bed, I think, with duvet. Place a nice plant pot in the corner. Encourage kids to participate, swinging from the light. it's an extension of aerial runway, so whilst our young people disappear off to do their aerial runway, they're practicing for swinging from the lights. Serve drinks and snacks. Do any of your churches do breakfast before church? Yes? Yes. I visited a church when I was in Manchester, and they had breakfast before the 9:30 service, and then they did tea and coffee after the 9:30 service.
But we did go to a church which had a refreshment and loo break before the sermon.
Before the sermon? Was that by any chance a 30 to 40 minute sermon?
Something like that.
Yes. You can understand why, then. Yes.
I think it's an idea which should be recommended to all churches.
And did everyone come back? So that's the reason I wouldn't let anyone go back after tonight. No, you stay. There's all these people that go, oh, you're just going out with the children. I'm just going out. No, come back.
Surely there is a question.
Yes.
There isn't a question for me, but why we should require everybody has to be in church all the time anyway.
Well, absolutely.
It wouldn't be a good idea to have church services for flexible going on quite a long time maybe with different people doing things, but nevertheless going on for quite a long time.
That would be a completely different model. It's something worth exploring, isn't it? Imagine a 3-hour-long service where you just come for the biggie one. It'd be brilliant. I can see a few challenges there, but why not give it a go? That's what we're talking about, isn't it? There is hope when we have ideas and something, do something different. We won't know whether it works until we've tried it. Okay, what else do we have on here? Play some good tunes, perhaps over some sort of headphone system. This is brilliant, isn't it? You sit on the tube or the bus or the train nowadays and you're surrounded by people with their headphones on. Some of them are talking because actually their headphones connect to their phone. They're not listening to music and talking to themselves. Okay, in case you thought that. They are actually talking. Some of them might be. Some of them, URC ministers usually. But everyone else, they've got their headphones on and they are listening to music all the time. You see them out jogging, running, walking, cycling. It's crazy, isn't it? But maybe this is the way forward for the church. We're all going to sit there and sing our own hymns to our favourite. You're going to select the numbers. Oh, yeah, I love that one this week. I haven't done that one for a while.
I love it. You know, no more
complaints. That's right. Would you never be able to go to minister? Oh, I didn't like that hymn choice this morning. No, that wasn't very good. Because you can have your own personalised one. I think it misses something, doesn't it? It would miss something, not being able to sing together and have that rousing, joining together. It's lovely singing with you lot, by the way, because you all join in, you know. I can see we've got the cream of, you know, the cream of the churches across the country. Because, you know, you can always tell that, can't you, when you go to the church, when it seems like you're the only one at the front singing. Ever had that experience, David?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And you think, it's either because they're sat so far at the back you can't hear them, or there's just like three people singing and the rest of them are all people.
Don't dare not sing because they have to cover my voice.
Well, that's my experience. Yeah, I always say to people, okay, I'm not the best singer in the world, so you just have to out-sing me. So go louder if you don't like the sound of my voice. It's fine. It seems to work, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. I'm glad we share that experience. Okay. Generally, be nice to one another and that sort of thing. If you've not come across Dave Walker before, these are cartoons that are from his website. Okay, so by now, you need a picture of a fluffy animal. You're probably feeling a little bit like the polar bear, you know. Oh, my goodness. You probably heard people talking about hope 20 years ago, last time you came to a forum, or, you know, well, you were there, and 40 years ago, you were there. You know, you've probably heard this time and time again. Now here we go again, talking about hope. Why do we always talk about... Well, the reason we talk about hope is because this is what the kingdom of God is like. Let's go back to our Bibles. If you've got a Bible, would you like to turn again to Mark 4? And you may have spotted, as Melanie did, that actually the parable of the sower is the one we're all familiar with. That's the one where some of the seed goes on the path and some of it goes on the good soil and some of it goes in the weeds. But this follows that. And that's why I chose it. I thought, well, that's a bit different. This is the parable of the growing seed. And I was talking to Abby yesterday about allotments, because we have an allotment. We love growing our own vegetables. And she's really excited because she's got a really good crop of potatoes. And there is something special about digging up from your garden your own vegetables. Hands up if you've ever done it in your life. Maybe you don't do it now. Hands up if you do. Okay, hands down. I'm talking to the converted. But there is something so special. You go to that patch of soil, you don't know what's underneath. Could be an absolutely rubbish year and you'll have two little tiny potatoes. Or you can have masses. But there's something really exciting. I'm like a child, you know, that's at Christmas when you unwrap all the fruit. Oh, look, there's another one. And it doesn't matter how many times I dig through and check how many, all the potatoes are out, there'll still be another six in there. I'll go back and go, oh, no, I missed one. But it's so exciting, digging your own crops and vegetables. That's enough about allotments. Don't get me going on allotments. No, do get me going on allotments. If you want to talk about allotments, I'll talk about it. But it always springs to mind Now, having had the experience of growing things for myself, when I come to a parable like this, it's so true. It's such an important message. We put the things in the ground, and we do not know what will happen. I can plant the same crop year on year in different places. I do the crop rotation thing. But I can plant the same crop in my allotment, and no 2 years are the same. Some years, God gets the water and the sunshine right, and sometimes he doesn't. It's just one of those things. I've got used to it now. I used to get annoyed. I thought, what am I doing wrong? But no, it's up to him. If he decides it's going to be a good year for potatoes, it's a good year for potatoes. If it's a good year for beans, it's a good year for beans. This year's been a good year for beans. Possibly not so good for my butternut squash. But there you go. Some years it is, some years it isn't. So that's what comes to mind when I hear this. So let's listen again. He also said, this is what the kingdom of God is like. A man scatters seed on the ground. I think he covers it, you know, a little bit of soil. Because it wouldn't be any good on top. Night and day, whether he sleeps or gets up, the seed sprouts and grows, though he does not know how. And it doesn't matter how many times our scientists go and analyse how plants grow, it's still that miracle, isn't it? Any of you that have had children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren, it's a miracle that life is continued. It's a miracle. You have to be there to realise what a miracle it is. And then the same way, I see seeds, and I think that thing that I put in the ground that looks so dead and useless, it has sprouted. And I don't know how. I know the science behind it. I know how it all works with the sunlight and all the changes of the chlorophyll and all that kind of stuff. But the thing is, it happens. All by itself. The soil produces the corn, first the stalk, then the ear, then the full grain. And as soon as the grain is ripe, he puts the sickle to it, because the harvest has come. So just like my potatoes, as soon as the harvest time has come, get the fork out and dig them wide. Okay, that's a parable of growing. Okay, and you see where I'm going with this? It's time for you to do some work, because you're beginning to nod off. Although you still enjoy the cartoon, so I know you're weak. What I want you to do is just talk to someone next to you. Maybe move if you're all sat on your own. Oh. Move a bit closer. And then talk to someone about this miracle of growth. Clearly it's a parable about growing. And I want you to think, this is a parable about growing the church. So what is it saying to us? And about how much is our responsibility and how much is God's responsibility? Chat to each other. Go. Some thoughts, please. Don't be shy. Along the front and then along the back.
It's up to us to plant the seed, but then we leave it to God and we don't worry about it.
Brilliant. Two important factors there. Leaving God to do God's bit once we've done our bit, and then not worrying. You know, there's a lot of anxiety around, isn't there, at the moment in the church. We don't need to be so anxious as we are.
I've got a garden that, for some reason, keeps growing me a lot of bindweed, which is fairly useless. I keep moving it out.
Yes, and it keeps coming back.
It keeps coming back.
This is a common experience. You know, some plants are more tenacious. If only our church was as tenacious as bindweed.
My cat walked in and walked out, he got some wire in his neck, and I didn't put it there.
No, that's right. Okay, wouldn't it be wonderful if we were trying to grow bindweed, we'd probably struggle, but it just grows wild. Stephen.
Yes, I'd like to add to what Wendy said. You don't worry about it, but then there is a time when you do get involved again, and you're like the person in the parable, you're reaping the harvest.
Yeah.
So we do have that bit at the end as well.
Yes, that's right. And bringing people into the kingdom, it's not just planting the seeds and planting the seeds. If you're never bringing people in, you need to do both. Yes.
I'm probably going to say the same thing about a third time, but God help those who help themselves. He'll help us if we want us to.
Yeah. What was that lovely hope someone had down here about not the rest of the family not being lazy? We can't leave it to everyone else, can we? We can't say, oh, it's everyone else's fault. I've done my bit.
Repeat something Rosemary said because I thought it was really good. Her church, they have a lunch club, it's full, so they're not really advertising this lunch club.
Yeah.
But out the blue, a lady came in and said, oh, you've got a lunch club here, you know, oh, I'd like to talk about Sunday school and my children, what other activities do you do here? And that came because she had realised that the lunch club was on, but she has nothing to do with the lunch club, and they've got to develop that, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, so brilliant. From those contacts, other things can happen. Sometimes we plant seeds without even knowing it, don't we? And Mark's mentioned Facebook and how you can have a presence on Facebook, which people can link into. And you don't know how many seeds are being planted. We don't know how many people are looking at that. Well, sorry, we do know how many people are looking at it, because it told us, didn't they? But we don't know what impact those seeds are having. So we just keep throwing those seeds out, hoping that somebody can run with it and the church will grow.
Well, thinking about the church situation, when things don't seem to have a lot of hope in front of us, it's like driving along in your car and there's a roadblock.
Yes.
And you've got to find another way where there is hope.
Yes, yes.
And sometimes we're sticking at the point where there isn't hope in front of us. But there's always hope.
Yes.
If you look for it.
Absolutely. God will never give up on us. Okay, the way we're doing church, God might have a few words to say, I think. But I don't think God's going to give up on any of us. And okay, the church is going to change, it's going to adapt. It's going to have to adapt, as you're rightly saying. We can't carry on driving down the same road if it's leading to disaster, if it's leading to nowhere. We need to change and take a different route, take a different road and a different approach.
Yeah, it's if we listen.
Yes, and being open and listening to God is a challenge. Yeah. Yeah.
Listening to other people too, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Not just listening to those within the church, but those outside. We've got David and then...
Yeah, back. To be prepared for downs before ups.
Yeah.
And not to be worried, not to follow the advice of the charity commissioners and to act in faith. They insist that you do nothing in faith unless you've got the finance to back it first. We don't work like that. When I moved to my very first living, 6 weeks later, my wife produced our first child. 2 weeks later, we took it to church. 3 weeks later, a deputation arrived on the vicarage front doorstep. There is indeed a place for children, but it's not in church. Finally, I said, what happens when you, two of your congregation produce a child? Easy, they said, the husband comes 1 week, the wife comes the next. Fine, I said, I will come 1 week, my wife will come the next. They weren't very keen on a vicar who only came to church once a fortnight, and a third of our congregation of 40 left. We never found out where they went, and that was within 3 months of arriving in this church, in my very first job. A number of years later, we were having to open up the church hall every week to accommodate the influx of families, to be prepared for the downs
before the ups.
Before the ups.
Yes. Yes, judicious pruning is another good gardening tip, isn't it?
I think really this is what Wendy said, to see ourselves as others see us. And we can only do that really if we're prepared to listen and share, which is something I've been doing over the last 8 weeks about coffee break in our church. Of course, a lot of controversy over this, and John Lee, whom you know, sort of said, gently, softly, softly, spirit by degrees. And it's taken this long, and people are now coming back and saying, I like it like this. But it's been a hard struggle along the way.
Yes. Yes, if you've ever tried to introduce something new at church, you'll know there's always some resistance. A top tip I can offer you for free is try saying, this is for 6 months trial period.
Yeah.
Okay? If it's a good idea, after 6 months, no one will be worried about it, ever questioning it and asking for a review. If it's a bad idea, you will have stopped doing it. Yeah? Just remember that one. Rather than just say, we're going to do this. Because in church life, it seems to be some jobs you take on and there doesn't seem to be an end to them. There's a job for life. Well, let's stop that. Let's say you will do this for 5 years maximum, or whatever period you fix. But have an idea that after that you will find someone else. And if we have a new idea and a new initiative, let's say, let's trial it for a period. And if we like it, we can keep it. If we don't like it, we can get rid of it. In our church, we had a lot of concern about passing around an empty offertory bag. You know, because everyone's on direct debit, standing order, whatever. So we said, this is really daft. The only people who put money in the bag are probably people that are visiting. So how's that going to look to them if we're passing an empty bag, nobody else has put money in, we're just getting it from the visitors? So it was proposed that we would have a box by the door, and then anyone coming in that wants to put their envelopes or their loose change in would put it in the box as they came in the church. So we don't pass a bag around. We still have a point where we offer up the offertory to God and we pray, but we don't have the thing of passing a bag around. At first, everyone went, oh no, offertory's going to go down like this. We're a disaster. Not made any difference. Interesting. I'm not recommending that for everyone. It's just, in our context, that was the feeling of the people. Why are we passing around an empty bag and only expecting it from the visitors? We trialled it for 6 months. We're still doing it now. I've lost count of how many years we've been doing it. Okay. Brilliant. Thank you. Let's move on. Time to go back to this report. From anecdote to evidence. So the evidence is the things that are common where churches have grown. And this is today's one from the book. And it's no surprise, is it? The involvement of all people, lay and ordained. And in our churches, perhaps even more so than the Anglican churches, with church meeting, making decisions, and elderships and so on, we should have this. This should be part of our DNA. Everyone's involved. Everyone's a part of the growing the church. It's not down to one person. It's not down to the minister or just the elders or whatever. It's down to everyone. So the involvement of all people. It's like that great interconnected web, isn't it? An interconnected web. It's a beautiful picture of a spider's web. And actually seeing the spider's web reminded me of a story from my childhood. When I said to you earlier, we moved around a lot when I was smaller. My dad worked in the Royal Naval Dockyards, so I was born in Chatham. But I don't really remember that because we moved at the age of, when I was five, we moved to Scotland, to Dunfermline, to another country. And I don't know how I feel about independence for Scotland. I can understand why the people in Scotland want independence. If you ever live up there, you have that sense that all news comes from London. And now I live in the southeast. That's fine because that's where I am. Well, why wouldn't it be the centre of the US? But actually, if you're in Scotland, you do feel it's a different world. Anyway, so from my childhood, my whole primary school childhood was in a Scottish school. So the songs we sang, Speed, Bonnie Boat, yes, or whatever it is, all of those Scottish. And the story that I remember from my primary school days is that of the spider. Am I right, Robert the Bruce? Yeah. Brushing off the cobwebs in my own breath. So there's this story about Robert the Bruce in the middle of some battle, doesn't matter which one, he is at the point of near defeat and he's in the cave wondering what on earth to do next. And he watches this spider swinging across to make the spider's way. Doesn't go the first time, nor the second time. And the spider keeps going until the web is created. This message of the story is all about not giving up hope. That small creature carried on trying and trying and trying and trying. And therefore, the message that he had was, don't give up. It's not over yet. There's still some fighting to do. And off you went. Is that roughly the story? Or is it, have I missed it?
No, that's fair enough.
Thank you. Something's too irritating. He knocked it down on his way out of the cave. Yes, we opened up our caravan this year and found it was full of cobwebs. Maybe there's a message there for me. Yes, don't give up. Just like the spider, if it doesn't happen the first time, keep trying. Okay, that's a little aside. The priesthood of all believers. I don't know, perhaps it's me that hasn't preached on this for a while, but this is part of our DNA as the Protestant church, as the Reformed churches. So whether you're Methodist, Baptist, URC, Anglican, we're all part of the Protestant church. And this is one of those key things that Luther came up with. Good old Luther. Good old Luther. Priesthood of all believers. We all have a part to play in spreading the good news, in sharing the gospel. Okay, so what might this mean in our 21st century? I came across this lovely expression, clicks and bricks. Clicks and bricks. The clicks obviously refers to using computers, all that clicking noise, and the bricks are our buildings, premises. And just for illustration purposes, there's a picture of Park Church, where I am the minister at the moment, and have been for 11 years. What I want you to think about is in what ways your church might have been using new technologies. Okay, so it's the chance now for a quick chat, just 1 minute this time. So if you know what's going on in your church, if there's anything going on the web or other technologies, talk to each other and be ready when Melanie runs around with a microphone in 1 minute. Off you go. Okay, 1 minute's up. Stick your hands up. Let's see what we come up with. I'll make a list. Off we go. From the back.
This time last year, we were looking forward in our church to starting something called Cafe Connect. And it has absolutely gone amazing. It's just gone from strength to strength. I don't want to say too much, but we have something like 30 mums and 30 children coming along Monday, Wednesday, Friday to a great time in the church itself.
Yep.
And actually using the church carpet for the church children to play on, which is fine. You have to clean it, but never mind. But just recently, something amazing happened to the website is that one of the mums have actually put about our Cafe Connect on NetMums.
Right.
And yeah, advertise it that way, which we wouldn't have asked for, but they just did it off their own back. So it's self-advertising for that.
Fantastic. And that is the way the social media is going at the moment. Yeah. So I think it's MumsNet. Yes. MumsNet.
I've got a cottage up in South Uist, and we started a new thing up there where we put cameras into the church for a Sunday, and we're in send it out live on the internet. And we're getting quite a few hits on the internet through it.
Right.
So and it's left there till Saturday for the following week. Then he takes it down and then starts again the next Sunday.
So live broadcasting over the way?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Ted.
Hello.
Okay. Another one over this side.
Well, about 2 weeks ago, we used to have a PowerPoint in our church, and you kept putting the inlet in the wrong order, sometimes upside down. We just changed over to a new system, and we've got no problems now. I don't know what it's called. It's the latest technology system.
Brilliant. Yeah, it could be SoftPro. That's the software that we use. That's all the inlet. Just got to remember to get the right version.
We've been running. We first of all, I say we don't have any technology in the church. We don't have any screens or internet connections or anything. But what in order to the church doesn't have a lot of money or resources, so it's been running a scheme called Micro YPS, which is a one of our young people has been employed as sort of the same sort of scale as a paper round. So the church has been paying a salary. It's a district organised thing. And he, as part of his project, has created the website. He's in the process of, he's put together a scheme to install the equipment into the church, which he's then gone and gathered around. He has a few, what our minister calls HR problems, i.e. getting volunteers to help him. But apart from that, it is a scheme that has used the skills of some of the young people in the church and also enable the church to move forward in terms of the resources it has.
Thank you. Brilliant. Any others? Wendy again.
Hello.
ours is a fairly conventional website, but certainly if you were new to the town, you could investigate it and find out what's going on. But it does have the weekly news sheet, is always there, and the current magazine is always there, so it is up to date in that sense.
Brilliant.
Yeah, my name may be David, but in many things I'm a Philistine. And this is one of them. And I suppose the words I have to offer are both and, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. We've had some very practical things on that in that direction. Namely, one, we have a lot of people in the locality who don't have access to anything like this. We stopped issuing a parish magazine 2 years ago when it was intended to put it through the church website, which has been revamped more times than I've had hot dinners, which is a good thing.
Yes,
you know, it's,
yes.
At least it's up to date. But we found that people were not picking up on things which were happening because they didn't have the means of finding out. And so as a consequence, next month we're reintroducing a parish
magazine.
Woo-hoo! You know, so don't throw the baby out of the bathwater.
Absolutely. I think the term that they use these days is integrated media. So sounds very grand, but all it means is you just hit everything. So if you wouldn't just put it on your website, you wouldn't just put it on Facebook, you wouldn't just put it on Twitter, you would put it on all of them and have a printed poster which you could then send around to other churches or whatever. So I think you're absolutely right. And the problem is, of course, the printed media has got more and more expensive. If you want to know why so many things are done by email and people send you through posters by email, it's because you then have to print it out on your paper with your ink at your expense, and they haven't had to spend a penny. So it's really, really significant. The reason a lot of church stuff is now done by email is because that's free-ish, and certainly a lot cheaper than the printed media. Gay wanted to say something on that.
If a church hasn't really got the facilities or the knowledge to do something, if you've got a churches together group or a bigger church, often you can do it through them and they will give you a link.
Yes, or advice. Well. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, just out of interest, can you put your hand up if you know that you've got internet connection at your church? When you're in your building, yes. Hands down. That's more than half of you. That's more than half of you. I'll tell you what, as a minister now, if I went to any, if any church calls me that has not got broadband connection to the church as well as the manse, I would have to insist that was put right. Because I cannot operate without connection to the internet now. Isn't that strange? Yeah, you might criticise that and go, oh, what's wrong with paper and pen? But actually, everything, resource-wise, is linked through my computer. I've got, and on this computer that I carry around with me, I've got all the sermons, all the service sheets since 2003, when I was ordained. Everything's on that machine, which is incredible. You could never carry around all the filing systems. Not only that, but any songs that I've ever purloined from different places with the appropriate copyright reference. We pay our licenses. They're also on that computer. All the stuff, all the minutes from my elders' meetings are on that computer. It's not a heavy computer, but it's just everything's on there. So if I went to any place that didn't have broadband connection, I would be sunk. Because I can share all that. No. I'm also in a church where, fortunately, I've got people who know what they're doing. So it's all backed up to the cloud. I hope. I don't know what it means, but it means it's somewhere safe. It means it's somewhere safe. No, I do have a backup as well. So, Mark, go on, you know much more about this than I do.
No, I don't know a little bit.
No, I tell you what, I ought to confess, because, you know, you always, and having said all this about my computer, you probably think I'm a whiz at this thing. We don't have a Facebook page at our church, and we don't do any tweeting. I've got a Twitter account, but I don't tweet. And I occasionally get something from my son, and I go, what's that? But, you know, I don't really do it. But I know that it's going to be one of those things that's going to change. And in some churches, particularly those that work with the 15 to 35s, it's the only way they communicate. They wouldn't do a magazine, not a printed one. There's no point in giving my church secretary anything on paper. He loses it. It's got to be electronic. He won't even touch it. So it's really interesting. He's not 15 to 35, by the way. But it's really interesting how some people will not deal with paper. And other people, it's the only thing that they'll deal with. And I think David's absolutely right. There's no good throwing out the baby with the bathwater, because we will lose that ability to communicate with somebody. Might only be a smaller and dwindling number of people, but we'll lose that ability if we lose all of those. So it's about everything. Mark, fill us in.
No, three things, actually. And I totally agree with what David says there. One, if your church hasn't got a website or anything like that, and you're really scared about it or what have you, get in touch with Lawrence Moore at the Windermere Centre, which is what I did about 3 years ago. And for £100 only, you can have your own website, and he'll show you how to do it and everything else. You can go up there and do some training if you want to, but basically, as a one-off licence fee of £100, you can get yourself a website, which you can manage and control yourself fairly simply. If you want to look at the Christchurch Group website, which I can't remember the email address or the website thing now, that is an example of it. But if you look at the Windermere Centre as well, that their website is exactly the same. It uses a package called something or other, I can't remember. But I was astounded because people were telling me, oh, you've got to pay £100 every time you get somebody to do something or make change. That's it, WordPress. It uses a thing called WordPress. So that's number one. Number two, we, at the church that I came from, we had a dad's breakfast every fortnight, which we started about 3 years ago. And about 12 months ago, I had some of the mums whinging at me, saying, well, why aren't you doing something for the mums? And this was partly through Facebook. They were sort of saying, well, why? And so I said, well, if you get some people to ask, we'll sort something out. Cut a long story short, when I left in March, April, we had our third mum's breakfast. We had over 100 mums, dads and kids in the building. Opened up the whole church because it's fairly flexible space, and it was absolutely packed. And that was generated by me putting something on Facebook, and actually the age range that Rob's just mentioned, 15 to 35 year old, 21 year old woman was passing messages on saying, oh, there's this thing, great thing going on down the church, having a mum's breakfast, come along. And we also started running another session on Sunday afternoon, which we called Open Church, where I said, if you want to come along and ask any question you like, I won't guarantee your answers, come along, a couple of hours, we'll have tea and cake, sit and chat, and what have you. And this young lady, who was about 20, 21, whose daughter I baptised 12 months ago, 18 months ago, was on Facebook asking her friends. She said, I'm going to a meeting this afternoon, I can ask any question I like about God. What would you ask? Help. thirdly, again, technology, our newest church in Wessex, in our Bournemouth International Church, which started very much as an outreach to Korea and has developed so much, it is now has people from all sorts of countries that go there, and they simultaneously translate in their services into Spanish and Portuguese, I think it is. So they have these headphones, that picture you showed earlier, they have people in the church with their headphones wandering around, and they are listening to people who are on the balcony telling them what the preacher or whatever's happening at the front is in their language. Because they're drawing in, they're a welcoming church, they meet for lunch first, and then they have a service, and then they have Bible studies. That's how they operate. But a couple of stories.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. Yes. Yes, yeah, look at that, 1 minute to go. Well, I wonder, quickly, do you now believe that growth is possible?
Yes.
Yeah? Well, got a few yeses, good. And I wonder whether we will be intentional now in growing the church, because, to remind you of yesterday, from this book again, key common ingredient strongly associated with growth in churches of any size, place or context is being intentional. So if we don't believe it's possible, we won't try it. If we do believe it and we don't do anything about it, it won't happen. If we're intentional, it might happen. Okay, it's time for a cartoon before you go. I wonder if you're feeling that you know, maybe Mark and I need to go and see the counsellor. The caption is, I can't stop going to church growth seminars. If you've got any questions, come and join my discussion group. But let's keep it in perspective. The God of the universe has not given up on the church. This is a picture, apparently, of the Perseus cluster of galaxies 250 million light years away. The God of the universe, the God of you and me, has not given up on us. Remember, all growth is by God's grace, underpinned by prayer. and in God's hands. It is time for coffee. Thank you very much.